Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Previously on The Score, Behind the Headlines.
You know, and as a big NBA fan, I grew up with a vague knowledge that Jordan's dad had been killed, and I always assumed that it was in some way tied to Michael Jordan, whether James Jordan was targeted because of who he was, or it had something to do with his alleged gambling.
I think it's important for people to remember that Michael at the time was being investigated by the National Basketball Association, that there were cashier's checks Michael had written in amounts $57,000, $108,000. You know, the guys who, again, he claimed were gambling buddies, and these were gambling bets, and given Michael's gambling history, that's believable, but these were guys, one of them had been murdered.
Welcome to The Score, Behind the Headlines, Episode 6, Holding Pattern. Behind the Headlines is an investigative podcast from 670 The Score. In Season 1, we're examining the 1993 murder of Michael Jordan's father, James Jordan. With Julie DeCaro, I'm executive producer Tony Gill. We're now on Episode 6 of this season, and originally, 6 episodes was all we intended to do. So far, we've done a general overview of the murder of James Jordan, talked about the corrupt history of law enforcement in Robeson County, where the murder allegedly took place, examined the blood and circumstantial evidence against Larry Demery and Daniel Green, and talked about the conspiracy theories that Michael Jordan's infamous gambling had something to do with his father's murder. And honestly, we initially intended to use this episode to talk about our feelings about the case itself, and then we plan to move on to another topic for Season 2. But thanks to the popularity of this podcast, word about our examination of this case made its way to Daniel Green, who was currently in prison at Lumberton Correctional Facility in North Carolina. And he asked us to send him transcripts of the episodes via his attorney, Chris Moma. We've been in regular contact with Chris, and we now believe we'll be able to talk with both her and Daniel Green in the coming weeks. So we're definitely going to do more episodes than we originally intended. And by the way, we know a lot of you guys are interested in hearing more about Hubert Larry Dees, the drug-dealing son of the sheriff Hubert Stone, remember him? Who worked with Larry Demery near the site where James Jordan's body was dumped, and who was never interviewed by the police, even though he was the very first phone call Demery and Daniel Green made from the cell phone in James Jordan's car. We've been trying unsuccessfully to contact both Dees and his attorney, Dale Godfrey. So far, no success, but we'll keep trying.
Back in 2017, though, Tony, Larry Dees did talk to the Robeson County paper of record, the Robesonian, and here's what he said in a statement via his attorney.
I've rehabilitated my name and reputation since being released on drug trafficking charges in 1998. I have built a successful business, and members of my community are treating me like a murderer when that's simply not the case. I've worked hard to build my life back.
And here's what his attorney, Daniel Godfrey, had to say in that same interview.
The attorneys assert that Sheriff Stone knew of his son's involvement in drug trafficking. Therefore, rather than investigating the murder as a drug deal gone bad, somehow convinced highly trained federal and state agents that in fact the murder was the result of a random carjacking.
Dees was not a convicted drug dealer at the time of the slaying, his attorney points out. He was later arrested and convicted of drug trafficking. But Dees said that happened only after Stone contacted the federal DEA and initiated an investigation into the drug trafficking in Robeson County. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, if he is actually the one who instigated a DEA investigation, so we'll have to try to find out. So I think there's some questions that we still need to answer here, and here's what we're hoping to do in the next few weeks. Number one, did Sheriff Hubert Stone in fact initiate a DEA investigation into drug trafficking in Robeson County? It seems kind of hard to believe, given that there was already federal testimony that he was on the take from drug dealers, so we'll have to see if we can track that information down.
Hubert Stone, it's hard to believe that he would, hey, come look at my county. I think we're doing some dirty stuff. it's hard to believe because nobody wants that on their record, you know, as the overseer of a county, that there was such rampant corruption and just terrible things going on in a place where you're supposed to be the highest authority in terms of policing, that you allowed this stuff to happen and you want the national shame of that. Like, I mean, unless he had a change of heart after all those years.
Right. And remember, Attorney General William Webb said back in 1987, there was a guy who testified under oath in a federal corruption trial that Hubert Stone was taking $300 per ounce from drug dealers for, you know, protection purposes. So that seems a little tough to believe.
Yeah. And the story of the two gentlemen that went to the Robesonian and took hostages, that they would go that far to try and prove that what Hubert Stone was doing and ask, like, don't send us to Hubert Stone because we are going to expose him.
Right.
I mean, that seems like a lot going on. If Hubert was like, come look at our stuff, please.
That seems a little tough to believe. So I'm going to dig into that and see if we can try to figure out if that's in fact true. Another big question for me is whether Larry Demery confessed to Connie Brayboy that he was the sole murderer of James Jordan. Remember, Connie Brayboy is the woman who was the editor of the Indian Voice, which was a now defunct paper in Carolina focusing on Native American issues. She says he confessed to her and that she kept it out of the paper because she didn't want to upset his mother, who was a friend of hers. We reached out to her on Facebook. She responded and said she wanted to come on the podcast, and we haven't heard from her since. So still trying to get a hold of her and see what she has to say.
That would be very, very interesting if we can, you know, track her down, and hopefully she's, you know, at a place where she's strong enough and able to do that. I don't know what's hindering her. I hope it's not a third party that is, you know, trying to bully its way into, you know, getting the truth out. But I think what she has to say is very key. If this is true that he confessed to her, this changes like a lot, and it undoes like a lot of the things that has gone on with the conviction of Daniel Green and just everything about it. It changes a lot.
Yeah, and she's one of, I think, three or four people who say that Larry Demery confessed to her, but at least two of those guys were guys who were in jail with Larry Demery, so maybe have something, maybe have a little bit of a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. She is the opposite of the conflict of interest because Larry Demery is a member of the Lumbee Indian community there. So is she, and she's friends with his mother. So she gave an affidavit to his defense team that you can read in the filings. So, you know, she's been under oath already testifying that this is true. So hopefully we'll be able to get in touch with her.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The biggest one for me, Tony, is there physical evidence connecting Daniel Green to the murder of James Jordan? And now that the blood evidence has been called into question, and Jennifer Elwell from the SBI says, if there were to be another trial and I testified today, I would say, I don't know if there's blood in the car or not. If you throw that blood evidence out, then what do you have other than Larry Demery's testimony?
Yeah, if, again, we know the motives of, you know, the state. They want a conviction on the murders. But again, my biggest issue is at what cost? If it's at the cost, and it takes a different spin for me personally, me being an American black man, does, if Daniel Green is being wrongfully convicted, again, by the state because of insufficient evidence that they have, it's messed up. It's messed up that they rather allow him to stay in prison on iffy evidence versus actually finding the truth or having to actually prove it with something. And that's scary.
Yeah, and there's a couple things. I mean, number one is, you know, at this point, I think there is zero physical evidence. And not only that, there's zero circumstantial evidence outside of the fact that Daniel Green had James Jordan's jewelry. But like we said, that points to robbery, not necessarily to murder. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, Tony, is that I think we need to delve a little bit more into the gun. You know, one of the things the state keeps saying is that, you know, we found the gun in Daniel Green's home. Well, remember that Larry Demery was staying there while Daniel Green was in prison for a crime he was eventually exonerated of. And not only that, you know, one of the things we talk about is all the mistakes that his initial defense team made. They never hired a ballistics expert to try to tie the gun to that bullet that was found in James Jordan. And not only that, the bullet that came out of James Jordan was so mangled that it was never tied to any gun. So the fact that, you know, when we talk to when we talk to Johnson Britt or when we talk to Hugh Rogers and they say, well, all the physical evidence points to Daniel Green, like we said last episode, what physical evidence are you talking about?
Yeah, the phone? Like, was there something on the phone or on who made the call? Was it, again, the blood is already iffy. The removal of the shirt, was there anything on the shirt that was buried? And look, if you can't prove it, what's the point? You know, if you know you can't prove it, and that's the weird thing about it too, is are you sure as a representative of the state, are you sure that this has been corroborated and it's the evidence is exactly on point and where it needs to go?
Yeah,
it just seems like they were just in a rush just to get a conviction.
Well, remember Hubert Stone talked with Scott Rabb from GQ, and one of the things he said was something along the lines of, well, if in this county, if you see a black and an Indian together, there's going to be trouble. So, I mean, you know, and then we keep hearing one of the things Johnson Britt pointed out was saying that, well, the SBI was involved in this case from the beginning, so it's not like Hubert Stone could direct them one way or another. But my understanding is the SBI is there just to assist. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, it's still looks like, at least from all the records that I have seen, that most of the interviews and the investigation is being done by Robeson County Sheriff's Office, and the SBI is sort of jumping in where they need to help, like with the forensic evidence and stuff. So if, for example, they decide we're not going to talk to Larry Deese, even though he's the first phone call they made from the car phone, and he's a known drug dealer, and he works a mile from where James Jordan's body was found, mm-hmm. then the SBI is not necessarily going to have that information to say, hey, why didn't you call this guy?
Even if Larry Deese didn't commit the murder, having his angle of what happened, I mean, it's got to be some truth in there, even if he makes up something. There's going to be some truth in there to kind of make it a more clear picture than just the testimony of Larry Demery being the end-all be-all.
Right. And, I mean, Larry Demery testified against Daniel Green in exchange for a life sentence instead of facing the death penalty. So it's not like he didn't have a reason to not tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
So when we started off this podcast, we said, you know, we're not on one side or the other. But it seems like as we get closer to the end, we're sort of both in the place where I don't know who did it, but it seems like there needed to be a lot more evidence in this case for us to feel comfortable with the conviction.
Now, you being the legal expert out of this group, if it's an I don't know, does that
equal— I don't know is not guilty.
Right.
I mean, guilty beyond a reasonable doubt doesn't mean beyond all doubt, but it means that you have to do some pretty serious mental gymnastics to get to not guilty. Mm-hmm. And in this case, I don't think you have to do any mental gymnastics to get to not guilty.
Mm-hmm. Like, because especially if it's done how it's supposed to, where you're not guilty, you know, until proven so. If you start from that space, I still don't know how you get up to guilty with all the stuff that's going on in between.
Well, just remember all the stuff the jury didn't hear, right? They didn't hear any of the Larry D stuff. Mm-hmm. The Daniel Green's initial defense team didn't call his alibi witnesses who said he was at this party all night. Mm-hmm. They didn't challenge the gun. They didn't challenge the hole in the shirt, you know, not being there and then being there. Mm-hmm. They didn't do a very good job with the blood evidence. So, you know, the jury isn't hearing the same stuff that we have seen. Now, we've had the benefit of going back and looking at all these records and seeing, you know, all the things that have happened since. But at the time, the jury doesn't know that the blood's going to get thrown, you know, basically not thrown out, but blood is going to wind up being a non-issue. They don't know that, you know, Larry Deese is...
It's an accepted fact.
Right. Right. And I mean,
it's not.
Yeah. And a lot of juries see prosecutors and police officers as white knights. And they believe them just by virtue of the fact that they're a police officer and they're a prosecutor. I think that the fascination with our listeners with Larry Deese continues to really be something that amuses me. I'm really, really hoping we can talk to Dale Godfrey so that we can hear from Larry mm-hmm. Deese, because he's been pretty vocal about the fact that he had nothing to do with this. But I think I think people would like to hear from him.
We will continue to search. The number we currently have doesn't lead directly to him. So we're still searching, you know, to talk to him. Julie, you have heard that he loves to talk about this case.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, to his credit, his client didn't have anything to do with this legally, according to this case. So he basically won this. So I assume he wants to talk about it and how he got his client kind of off of this case, even though I think he's in prison now.
He's out. Okay. Yeah, he's out.
But yeah, we definitely would like to talk to him, and we're going to talk to Chris in the coming weeks, and hopefully Daniel too.
And so if any of the stuff that we're talking about doesn't make sense, I really encourage you to go back to listen to those middle episodes of the podcast.
All the episodes.
Episode one got like a huge response. The conspiracy theory episode went off the chart. But some of the episodes that really have the meat of the case in there, like, you know, episode three, episode two about Robeson County, episode three about Larry Deese, episode four with all the blood evidence, those are the ones you really need to listen to.
And we really tried to, and we know it gets kind of, you know, I don't want to say boring going through all the things. We really try to kind of sum it up and give you guys what is most important in this case, and make it entertaining as well, how we produced it and stuff like that. So I think it's great on how we decided what was important and what you needed to know about this case to get as informed as you can be if you're interested in this case. Go back and listen to those episodes.
And for me, one more question is, you know, obviously we need to establish what Larry Deese's role, if any, is in mm-hmm. this investigation. And maybe it goes down to why Larry Deese was the first call, Daniel Green. And actually, I think he was the second call. The first call was like to a sex line or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are 17-year-old boys. and that's a thing that I think really gets lost in this, that you look at a picture of Daniel Green and Larry Demery now, and they look like hardened, you know, guys who've been in prison for 20 years. But if But if you look at the pictures of them at the time, these were kids.
Yeah.
Kids. I mean, they look like babies. Mm-hmm. So I want to know why Larry Deese was the guy they decided they needed to call.
Yeah. I mean, if something very bad happened to James Jordan, and it's all just why, you know, why would these kids, if you believe how the prosecution went about it, we really don't know that either. They just did it. That's a giant leap for a kid, 17-year-old kid, to commit murder.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason behind it, even if it was an accident, quote unquote. But there's a reason why James Jordan is dead, and I think that we don't know that.
Well, and I think that sort of plays into the general racism we have when it comes to young men of color, right? It's kind of that Central Park Five, group of, you know, teenagers out there, black teenagers, who knows why they do what they do kind of thing. But, you know, to me, it seems like you've got two guys telling very different stories. Larry Demery says we were there robbing people and Daniel Green just shot him. And Daniel Green says, I wasn't even there. He called me and said he needed help getting rid of a dead body. Mm-hmm. So somewhere in between there is
the truth. Yeah.
So another thing that we've had a bunch of people ask us the status of the case. So here's where it is. Chris Mumma, and hopefully we'll talk with Chris next week and she'll be able to let us know.
We'll continue the storytelling part of the aspect of this podcast.
That's why this one is called Holding Pattern, because it was like, we have to put out an episode, but we don't really have any new information. So they're waiting. The judge, basically, in this case, who heard Daniel's motion for a new hearing on evidence, said, I'm going to deny it. But I don't think he has officially denied it. And I don't think he has handed down written opinion yet. I've been watching for it online and waiting for it. And I haven't seen it come down yet. So until the judge's written opinion comes down, they don't even know what they need to appeal. So Chris said they're planning to appeal, but they don't even know what the issues are yet because they need to find out what the judge says about the case. So everybody right now is just sort of waiting.
I can't wait till we can actually have like the after episode to discuss, because I think we do need to delve into the justice system a little bit, just overall and how. I mean, I got so many thoughts,
on
that.
Me too.
We'll definitely discuss that in a later episode once we're done telling this story. But yeah, it's just so much stuff around this case. It's like, why is it taking him so long? He made his decision, what, 2 weeks ago?
At least.
I mean, and this is not like a, just a Passover case. Like, this is a kind of infamous case. And it's taking this long for them to make an appeal. Like, I don't know what he's waiting for. They're going to appeal, regardless of how long you wait. This whole thing is just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good look for, sadly, this is the way the justice system works for a lot of, not just people of color, but people who are, don't have means, like considered quote unquote lower class. Mm-hmm. This is the way the justice system works for them. So I think it's a good, hopefully eye-opening thing to look at for a lot of our listeners. Within the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk to Chris Mumma and Daniel Green. So if you have specific questions you want to ask them, like, why didn't blah, 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 or why did you do this? Why did you do that? Like, I want to ask Daniel, why did you guys call Larry Deese? Who was Larry Deese to you guys? Mm-hmm. Was he someone Larry knew who he thought, oh, here's a guy who will know what to do? Was it more than that? Was he at that hotel because of Larry Deese and now he doesn't know what to do? I mean, those are the questions I want to ask him. So I would say to our listeners out there, if you have specific questions that only Daniel Green can answer for you, let us know and we'll try to get him in.
You want to tell them the Gmail, the longest Gmail ever?
Yeah, I don't remember what it is. I think it's 670 behind the headlines at gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We'll shorten it up for next season. All right. Anything else? Any big questions that you have going forward that you feel like we need to answer within the next few?
No, I think we've gone over all of them. Again, my biggest concern was, does the way the state went about it in terms of getting the evidence, did that supersede actually finding the truth?
The score behind the headlines is written and researched by me, Julie DeCaro, and our executive producer is Tony Gill. New episodes are posted Monday of each week on radio.com and wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Julie DeCaro, at Tony Gill 670, and at 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.